All right. Welcome. Call the special village board meeting to order. It is Monday, October 1st at 7:02. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Corsini.
Here.
Trustee Cargi.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conti.
Here.
Trustee Hennig.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Naduse.
Here. I can ask you all to stand to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, thanks. Nope. Thanks, Mike.
Well, you're it's right. Yes. Look at the right.
That's good. You want it right.
Okay. All right. So we are on to item three, which is no citizen comments. So item four, which is the elected official comments and announcements. Maybe we'll start with Trustee Gibbs.
Thank you all for coming. Happy October. I'm sad about the Cubs. I'm happy about the Bears. That's it. We have a busy night. I'll move on.
Thank you.
I'll just say good evening to the comments.
Okay, thank you.
I have nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing for me.
Okay, thank you.
Just one comment. The Imagine OPRF community meeting is going to be on October the 3rd at 7 p.m. It's going to discuss again the master plan, only this one. There's only one. We combined. The last time there were two options, orange and blue, and now there's only one. We combined them all. Now it's still a draft, so we'd like to, and there are five sequences. How this project is to roll out, and by the way, it still has not been approved by the Board of Education in Oak Park, so this is just a preliminary discussion, trying to get, again, additional community feedback. There will be some cost estimates. We're hoping at least, well, some of us, I guess, for sequences one through three, there are cost figures for them. We're trying to get cost figures for sequence four and five. Because there and this whole five sequence plan is estimated to be done subject to funding 6 to 10 years. So I encourage all of you to be there, or as many, or spread the word. For those of you who can make it, we appreciate it. And then again, if you're unavailable to attend, the information will go on the website. So. And then, again, I want to be clear, it's still a proposal. The Board of Education, Oak Park, River Forest has not approved it. So, and the idea is to have the board approve it at their November board meeting. So
okay,
that's
thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
Russ. Tom?
I'm kind of happy about the Cubs, but.
Jeez, do we have to start that now?
No controversies.
Yeah.
Is that south side? No, that's the north side.
No.
Well, at least they're still in the playoffs.
Yeah, so good.
I have no room for hate on this side.
It's a good one.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming. I missed a good meeting last time, I heard, but you guys got through a lot of important stuff. I just wanted to extend our condolences for a terrible, untimely passing of Margot Pizzo, which was a sudden shock. Passed away on Thursday, and just our condolences to Jim and the girls and the family. Just a reminder about how precious life is, and that you never know what's going to happen. So just our deepest condolences to the family.
That's all. Yep.
That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Carmella, and I, too, who I know Jim and Marco very well, and feel very sad for the family at this moment. It was very sudden and unfortunate, so our thoughts and prayers go out to the Pizzo family. I have no other report, although I have a question, I guess, more so maybe to Lance regarding the article that hit the Wednesday Journal regarding the citizen group that's in Oak Park is asking Oak Park Village to cap all the taxing bodies in Oak Park, cap their taxes to the CPI. Good idea. But how does that work for D200, where, you know, both of us actually, maybe it doesn't have any effect, but where both of us actually share in the revenue or share in the taxes?
Well, the village can't cap. I've got the mic on, I think. The village can't cap other taxing districts.
Well, that's what is being proposed in the Village of Oak Park tonight.
Yeah. I mean, they can request or pass a resolution indicating a preference for the other taxing districts, but they can't. I mean, you can't even control. You have even limited control over a municipal library, which is actually part of a municipality.
But they're tax capped already.
Which one?
The non-home rule. Oak Park.
Well, the village is home rule, but the school
rule, but the others,
is capped anyway.
Yeah, the others would be capped, except for new property. Right. And some communities do try to hold the levy at a certain rate, even with new property, you know, as a voluntary gesture.
So that's very interesting. Other taxing bodies are already capped, so it's only the,
well, the schools, for sure.
Of Oak Park, so seems like an interesting question to ask.
They are capped, but realize that the cap doesn't apply to new property. And there are some communities that try to keep their levy limited to CPI and not capture that new growth as a goal. But, I mean, it would be a goal, like sending a resolution to Congress to pull out of a certain country or something. You know, I mean, it doesn't really.
Okay.
It has public potential importance, but not legal.
Well, I actually got a few emails today. Apparently, they misread the article because the article's talking about the CPI cap. Mm-hmm. They thought that the citizen group was going to ask to consolidate all taxing bodies into the Village of Oak Park, which I thought was, I don't know how they can consolidate 200. But, all right.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah.
And
all right.
As we all know.
So I want to make sure if anybody's listening out there and that is impossible to, as I thought it was, and as I told the other residents, that I don't see that as a even a imaginable possibility.
No pun intended.
I use that word purposefully. All right. Very good. So we'll move on to recommendations of boards and commissions. We have none.
Chicago Avenue.
Sorry. Most important subject. The discussion of Chicago Avenue. I asked Eric to put this on the agenda for us because there has been quite a bit of conversation in the community about the Chicago project and, you know, its delays or and when it's going to be finished. And even though we put all of that on the website, I think it's real important that we around this table also understand where the project status is. So.
Right. Maybe, Jeff, if you could just come to the mic and just give the board an update on your memo and where things stand and answer any questions.
Sure. So, as I'm sure everyone is painfully aware, we're well underway with the Chicago Avenue project after some substantial delays. We had started some utility relocation conversations with NiCor and AT&T back in, I think, February of this year. Long story short, they didn't get their work done until mid to late August. So we had some issues there, obviously. Contractor finally came in mid-September, was about to start work, I should say, early September, and then we ran into some other issues with a subcontractor because their schedule got out of whack with the delays. So, we worked through all that. Contractor came in earnest, started working on September 13th. And as I'm sure you've noticed, we've gotten a lot of sidewalk and curb done at a lot of those corners. We've also excavated all of the bump out locations for the rain gardens. And we're in the process of, we're about halfway done with installing the storm sewer within those bump out locations. So this week, they're going to continue to install the storm sewer in the remaining bump out locations. They'll continue with curb and sidewalk. And then towards the end of this week, the contractor who's doing the sewer work will then switch over and start taking all the manholes that are in the pavement, start lowering them in preparation for the pavement milling operation, which is tentatively scheduled to start sometime mid-October here. So we're kind of way behind the eight ball, but we're still on pace to get the work done. At least the access related work, the pavement, the sidewalk, the curbs, things that would affect pedestrian or vehicular access, that will all still be done as of right now, weather pending, before winter hits. So there might be things, sod restoration, some decorative elements, the fencing around the bump outs, things like that might not be wrapped up until spring of next year. But in continued conversations with the contractor and our resident engineer, we're still on pace to hit the major elements of, you know, the pavement and the sidewalk. So does anybody have any questions?
So is that going to be resurfaced from Harlem to Thatcher all the way?
Yes.
Okay, so we're not doing the split.
We had talked about that, and that was when we were kind of running into trouble with one of the concrete subcontractor that was having trouble from a schedule standpoint. With the new contractor that came on, they actually have a slightly, they're capable of doing more work in a shorter time frame. So we kind of scrapped that idea, and we're back to the whole thing. The only thing that'll have to wait potentially is some of the restoration.
So all this sort of came from the utilities not performing as they agreed. They're pushing it back, then interfere with the contract.
Yeah, I mean, that was a large, yeah, that was, you know, IDOT's time frame. Even the project was let in April 27th, I believe. We didn't have the pre-construction meeting through IDOT until June 27th. So IDOT's schedule, just from an administrative standpoint, is a long schedule to begin with. But yeah, I checked the other day that the permit was issued to NICOR for the relocation work towards the end of March. Well, they didn't finish their work till mid-August. So a lot of that stuff, you know, it's hard to get a contractor to come in and start work when we've still got unknown NICOR conflicts that need to be resolved. So. That was a massive part of those delays, yes.
We have no control over what the utilities do.
We push and push and push. I mean, we've run into issues with NICOR before. They've kind of become the bane of my existence since my time here. It's repeated. It kind of just, we run into the same problems with them over and over again. It's nothing new, and we're even, the work that they did do, the restoration was awful. So I've already had to go back to them and say I've mapped out locations that they need to revisit just because they left the site in a very unacceptable manner. So it just, like I said, it's a repeated effort with them.
And we've issued citations to them on some of that past.
Yes. I think so, off of some of their 2014 work.
I believe they did, or they, well, they went through, I strike that, they went through the adjudication.
How's, is the project manager been working out well, or has there been some issues?
Yeah, I think there were large help in trying to get a second concrete subcontractor on the job as quickly as they did. From the time that the first sub walked off the job to the time we got a second one, I think it was a little less than a week. And I think the construction engineer was a big part in having that conversation and pushing the contractor. So from a communication standpoint, it's been working pretty well so far. So if you can picture those bump outs, they're kind of an irregular shape. From the sidewalk to the other end of the bump out, it's basically going to be a 6-inch concrete curb that runs the perimeter of the bump out. And then on top of that curb is, it's like a foot and a half or a 2-foot decorative fence to match the Lake Street planters, if you can picture what those look like. We spec'd it out the same, so they should be a pretty good match.
So like a wrought iron type?
Yes.
So, Jeff, let me ask you a question. Since it took from June to, it sounds like August for the utility, maybe even longer, March, right?
Right.
Did it make any sense then just to reboot everything until the you know, summer of 2019?
That was part of the conversation. I don't know how that works, to be honest with you, from a funding standpoint, because this is STP. You know, that money is budgeted for this calendar year, this fiscal year, I should say. So I don't know if that's a guarantee that we still have that money available next year. That's why we kind of got into this conversation of what can we get done this year? Do we split it in half and just have one joint that we have to get through over the winter kind of thing? But again, when the second contract or the second concrete sub came on, everybody felt they had a much greater capability to finish the work. We said, let's push, and if we have to worry about some of the more decorative elements, we can live with that next spring. At least we can get the roadway and all the major components finished this year.
Made a wise decision.
Hopefully, we'll see.
We'll see.
Can we? I know you put it on the website, but is there any at any time where traffic is going to be totally ensnarled that we could do a Blackboard, you know, an audio message through our Blackboard Connect somehow just to warn residents that it's going to be kind of messy, especially with the schools? I know there's been some issues with parents and, you know, having no crosswalks and those types of issues. So from a safety standpoint, is there some way we could communicate in addition to what we're already doing?
Yeah, I mean, I think with the next big, if I'm correct me if I'm wrong, the next big inconvenience would be probably milling and you know, grinding and overlay at some point. So we can certainly give folks a heads up when that's going to start and give them a window, obviously weather dependent, some variables. And in instances when the utility work was going on and the school was in session, we always instruct the contractor never to be doing work during pickup and drop-off times. And in the event when we had these utility locates, we did have an officer or a CSO at a minimum staged at Jackson in Chicago to assist the children with crossing the street.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Never can
over-communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Say again.
Thank you.
Like the big message board? Yeah, we can certainly do that.
Like if you know the date that's going to happen, the sooner those people know that.
Sure.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
All right, thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much, and good job. Okay, we'll be moving on then to item five, which is the recommendations of boards, commissions, and committees. So I'll need a trustee, hopefully the second trustee, to move the motion, second it.
Make a motion to pass an ordinance for zoning variation for lot coverage at 514 Ashland.
I'll second.
Okay, very good. Steve, you want to say anything or?
Hi, good evening, President Ducey and members of the board. I do have some prepared statements. I'm unaware of what the protocol is here. I'm happy to address any specific concerns. I understand that there's not a lot of entertainment value in zoning. If it's your will,
I'm
more than
funny.
Happy to address the standards that were provided cause for concern to the members of the zoning board.
I think that might be wise because I think that's they have the packet with all the what the DRB said. So, yeah, maybe if you can speak, that would be great.
Terrific. I have to admit, I did have a prepared statement that was a little bit softer than what I'm going to be presenting tonight. I really didn't want to provide a technical rebuttal because I understand the glossing over people's eyes tends to lead towards a no vote. but I will address the standards as I recall them. Best and specifically in the context of the findings of fact, which were published online over the weekend. Standard one of the zoning code addresses hardship. As currently platted, the lot area of the subject property is 7,558 square feet. The code establishes minimum lot area in the R2 district at a minimum of 8,712 square feet. Thus, from a zoning perspective, the lot is considered a legal non-conforming use. The code further provides for the enlargement and alteration of non-conforming uses, specifically in the R1 and R2 district, reference section 10-5-7-B, which I'm sure we've all committed to memory. If the lot contained the minimum square foot footages required by code, the proposed addition would qualify as a by right build. Since the current occupants, myself, my wife, my two children, had no involvement in the original platting of our lot, our request qualifies by contemporary zoning standards as a unique, non-self-imposed hardship. By my recollection, this was not disputed by the members of the ZBA. Establishment of a unique, non-self-imposed hardship is widely considered the highest hurdle in zoning relief. While the finding of facts indicate two members believe we failed to meet this standard, there was little, if any, discussion regarding lot size or its legal nonconforming status, leading us to believe the standard had, in fact, been met. To be certain, any indication that we had not met this important standard was not verbalized during the meeting. Standard two, I'll read this one out loud. The aforesaid unique condition did not result from any action by any person having an interest in the property, but was created by natural forces or was the result of government action other than the adoption of a zoning ordinance. This issue was specifically addressed by, I believe it was the newest member of the of the board specifically was the dimensions of our garage, which is an ample 710 square feet. And I think there's a site plan that will indicate exactly where it is located on the lot. He is absolutely correct that we met the lot coverage standard, and once the garage was completed, we were at 28%, with the top threshold being 30% in that zone district. The inference, I assume, is that the existing garage's dimensions are such that we created our own lot coverage issue. This argument, I believe, is irrelevant, as the hardship basis was the undisputed fact, my belief, that the undisputed fact that the subject property meets both the spirit and intent of the zoning codes, the zoning code's definition of a non-conforming use as relates to lot area. Taken one step further, mathematically, the principal structure still if we had built a separate standard 24 by 24 square foot two-car garage, or if the garage original to the construction of the principal structure still existed, we still would have to request relief, though not as much, for lot coverage in both instances under this design. The dimensions of the garage as currently platted are not relevant to the request for relief, I believe, because standard one was met. The hardship is that the lot area is below the threshold set forth in the code. It needs to be noted that the two approving members of the board did not agree with the assessment of the newer member, and Chairman Martin offered no support or other indication of concurrence for this statement that we did not meet standard two, which is contrary to the findings of fact submitted to the board under his signature. Number three, the granting of the variation is not detrimental to the public welfare or unduly injurious to the quiet enjoyment, use, or development value of other property or improvements in the neighborhood in which the property is located. To this I respond, we submit our letters of support from the neighbors. We engaged the services of a licensed civil engineer to certify that the addition would not adversely affect stormwater management on the lot or impact neighboring residences. Light and air were specifically addressed, as we opted for a single-story addition versus second-floor addition, which would in fact affect light and air for the neighbors to the north. Again, the findings of fact reflect two members did not agree with this, that this standard was met. Honestly, at this point, I'm not even sure we were at the same meeting. I would like to know how a 500 square foot or 300 square foot provided for relief would be injurious or detrimental to my neighbors who in fact support this, had the opportunity to sit down. We reviewed the site plan. We provided the civil engineering, which is a building code requirement, but I thought it was important enough to present specifically to address this standard, and in fact our civil engineer stated with engineering certainty that it would not present a untoward effect on stormwater management within the lot. Lastly, there are no other means other than the requested variation by which the hardship or difficulty can be avoided or remedied to a degree sufficient to permit a reasonable use of the property. This we did have some discussion. I think specifically it was Chairman Martin who asked two questions. One, he asked if we could reduce the dimensions of the addition, and to that my response is that this is a modest addition. I think by any standards, this is an arts and crafts bungalow. It's a standard 1,300 square foot, two bedroom, one bath house. Going up, I believe, destroys the character of the arts and crafts architecture. I think that really is kind of a big deal, because we don't want to see a lot of the design features that, do you have photographs?
Yes.
You know, the unique features, it's got 3-foot rolled eaves, it's got relief banding around the house, and a second story simply is going to defeat what I believe to be a design and a form of architecture that contributes to the diversity of our housing stock in town here. The other issue actually was whether or not we could put a second story on. My wife would call me cheap. I call myself a chairman of economy. We need a bedroom. We need a slightly larger kitchen. We have a kitchen that is 8 feet wide, 12 feet deep. It's a galley kitchen, and what we're looking for is, again, a very modest addition, which will allow us to age in place. We have very deep roots in town. My family's been here since 1964. My wife has owned the house for 18 years. We're not going anywhere. We've got a fifth grader and a sixth grader. Aging in place is something that was always in our master plan. I believe that keeping that building at one level also helps that aging in place. I'm not going to want to take stairs. I'm 58 years old with a fifth grader. I think in 10 years when he's in approaching college, the last thing I'm going to want to do is run up and down the stairs. It's a humble request. It's a modest addition. I don't believe that we've pushed the envelope anywhere in this. I do have a zoning background. For those of you that don't know me, I am the zoning administrator in the Village of Forest Park, so I do understand certain slippery slopes in zoning law, and lot coverage tends to be one of them. But it's an undersized lot. We're making a request which I believe is, again, at best modest. It meets current needs, it meets future needs. I think it adds to, it's a value add to the neighborhood. I mean, anytime you make an improvement, I think an argument can be made that there is, you know, some improvement to the housing stock, which really makes me question, was it standard 3, which was talking about public welfare or unduly injurious to the quiet enjoyment or development value of other property or improvements in the neighborhood. I would happily debate that with members of the board if they so choose. So in summary, we're looking for something that meets current and future needs. We're not going to be looking for a third bite at the apple. I believe that this is a thoughtful request, and we're respectfully requesting the board's support in our petition for relief. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Steve. Is there any questions for Steve or Ellen?
I'll go. It's not very often that we get a decision out of the lower committee that's indecisive, 2-2. I've shared my displeasure with Eric and Kathy about the absenteeism on this board on occasion. It kind of puts the applicant in a spot because being absent counts as a not positive vote and is detrimental to the cause of the applicant. There are extenuating circumstances that I think Mr. Glinky did not bring up that would work, in my opinion, to his favor. It's a very busy neighborhood with all the activities in front of his house with St. Luke's, and how I believe the burden that the people in the house is directly across from St. Luke's School have to endure with regard to the traffic and, you know, all that. I would be pleased to grant this simply as a thank you for your service to Forest Park as a fire chief, but there's good things and bad things with different parts of the town. I mean, he's so close to a busy spot. I'm okay with granting this to give him more interior space to enjoy his home. So I know that was a roundabout way to say it. But looking at the photographs of the backyard, it seems like he's just bringing the house out to be equal to either one of his neighbors on either side. So that, and then with each neighbor being okay with it, That means a lot to me when the people that are directly affected on either side are good with the plan. So that's where
thanks.
I would be.
Well, Mike, you bring up a good point about indecision and two-to-two vote. It's an interesting perspective.
I have two comments I could make, too. We had a similar conversation at our last meeting when we were discussing the fire sprinklers and the resident who had a smaller piece of property. And so every little bit he did was a greater percentage overall than a house that would be being remodeled as that was larger. And so there is a distinct hardship in doing a small addition on a small lot where the percentage then becomes a larger amount. So I think this is a very reasonable request. The other thing that shouted out to me on and this is I guess procedural, and when I was reading the findings of fact, I also noticed that it was said two out of the four members agree or disagree with something. And then in the vote, it was a strict yes or no. And I don't know if that's how verbatim it was, but if it wasn't, and if they did, I would like to know the no votes, especially what standards they are objecting to specifically. And I didn't see that in the
vote. Well,
they're
supposed
to
do that.
I thought it was in the document.
Yeah,
it was in the document?
It was in the findings of fact. They went through the standard.
Yes, Susan, we changed that, remember, after that.
I know we did. And when I read it, I just saw the
11.
Final. So I must have missed that page.
Yeah.
Okay, then that was taken care of.
How much bigger is your garage? I couldn't quite figure out. How much bigger is your garage from a normal two-car garage?
A normal two-car garage is 24 by 24. Mine is, 700. You're asking me to do math on my feet here. I would probably say it's 24 deep by 30 wide.
So 6 more feet.
It's a three-car garage. It, in fact, the dimensions are shown on the on both on the plat and the site plan.
Can you tell me when did you put that garage in or build approximately?
2007, 2008.
Okay,
it was about 10 years ago. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm anticipating that you didn't contemplate adding an addition at that time when you put the garage in.
No, and I maintain that was not a self-imposed or a willful act. I think what we're presenting before you are existing conditions on a legal non-conforming lot. I mean, that's my argument. I'm going to stick with it.
And I do have one question, but I'm it's probably related to the staff, if you can answer. What is the, I know it's the 34.06% difference in the variation, but is that within the range of what we've granted in other variations?
I don't have that information.
I understand the question. I don't have the answer to that question, and I wouldn't want to speculate.
Okay. Because
this is the only coverage case I think that I've had in my time on the board. Because that was a question I had too, and I meant to ask, but I forgot.
Yeah, I don't think we get lot coverage. I mean, we don't get a lot of zero variations in general.
I'll see a lot coverage variation in the last several years. Commissioner Bernie referenced one in the past, but again, it's not the precedent setting.
Okay.
So even if we did have that data.
It's still like a guidance.
I
think it is important that we have some measure of consistency in doing this, because otherwise it just seems to be arbitrary.
Well, I can speak to that because I personally got one. When we did the renovation on our house 15 years ago, we had a one-car garage that was original to our 1929 house and a two-car garage that was added probably 40 years later. And we asked for a variance to make it one four-car garage that would bring it off of the property lines. So they.
What was the variance you got?
Right.
It was along these lines. It was just a couple feet that I was off.
No, it's a percentage of.
The variance.
It was within this range. It was less than 4.
Less than 4%?
Yeah.
So 34%.
Right.
I mean, the only thing I would say.
I needed to make the garage a little deeper, or a Suburban wouldn't fit in it. That's what my problem was.
Yeah, I mean, in deference to the applicant on this, I think the challenge here is you only have four votes of a 7-member board, and they're split, you know. So it's not an overwhelming rejection. It's not an overwhelming
endorsement. I understand.
Right, exactly.
So the only thing I am thinking is we had some petitioners come before us not that long ago where they were at 34% of FAR, and we basically right. rejected their proposal. And that was an interior dimension that we talked about. And
no?
Pardon me?
I thought it was larger.
Didn't they have
no,
some?
It wasn't,
didn't
it was,
they have some setback issues too?
Yeah.
Well, they had setback,
it
but it was interior. It was interior
yeah.
floor area ratio, and I thought it was
right.
about 34%,
no,
or maybe
we
it was 36.
No,
and
it was,
we were trying to work it down
right.
to okay.
to 34.
If I may, the floor allowable floor area ratio for us is 3,143, and the proposed is 2,171. So that metric is met. In fact, if we did put a second story on the structure, we would exceed FAR, which is, of course, the second metric that the village employs
right.
to determine the worthiness for development, residential development.
So basically, you're just adding a master bedroom and bathroom and kind of reconfiguring that
yes, ma'am.
Space. And I went out there today, took some pictures. You know, I looked at them. I was stalking
not
your house.
The home
you weren't
outside.
There, but I was stalking up. And basically, I mean, the addition is going to be shorter than, you know, your neighbors as far as extending back into the lot. You're going to be losing, you know, some portion of your backyard. I'm assuming we're moving forward with all of the grading necessary grading permits necessary to make sure that that's not going to infringe, or water drainage is not going to infringe, or is that's not big enough for us to warrant a grading permit.
With Jeff not being here, I would have to defer to him.
Okay.
They'll comply with
okay.
building codes
yeah,
and
okay.
stormwater stuff.
So, so as far as it extending further back than your neighbors, I mean, it's not going to obstruct their view.
No,
and
in fact, it's specifically we did
right.
that. We wanted to extend it at the same roof height so that it didn't affect light and air to the neighbor to the north.
So my only comment was
yeah.
that, you know, we did have a conversation of FAR recently,
yeah.
and, you know, we had some issues with trying to get that to at least 32%.
Right.
This is 34, so, I mean, I'm not sure
that
how
one
much
was
you could shave.
40, it started at 48.
Yeah,
but then
it was a lot bigger.
But then I thought it came back down.
No, but then what they're going to do is basically pretend like they weren't
right.
Yeah. Well, and it was a standard
yeah.
lot. It was a bigger.
Right.
That's
didn't have,
why
it
that's
was
my
much
point
bigger
about house.
No,
they
didn't have any
so
lot
much.
Coverage ratio issues. It was
no.
more interior issues.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, that was my only concern, was that we were going to be adjudicating one type of case and not considering that. But, I mean, this seems reasonable and. Was it, but for, you know, not having such a big garage, you wouldn't have had this issue. So,
well,
I mean,
theoretically, if I had a standard garage,
right.
or even if the original garage that when the building was, you know, deeded and platted, I would still need relief. Not as much, but I would need relief.
So
I dug up an old plat and did the calculations, and I still would have needed, you know, 25 feet for the additional garage and about 150 feet for the standard 24 by 24.
Those are my only issues.
I mean, I thought the same thing since we had denied that one homeowner, but then the more I thought about it in terms of the difference in the sizes in the two homes, for one thing, you're talking about, what, it's a 1,400 square foot home adding
right.
500. The other piece that I thought kind of lent towards our goal of improving our historical preservation is the fact that you are being mindful of wanting to keep the character of the original house that was built in 1890s.
Yes.
And so by improving a house, we also do talk about wanting housing that allows folks to age in place, and so I do think it's kind of checking off some boxes in terms of those aspects.
And you're not making any modifications to the front where that would warrant
no, ma'am. During the course of my own due diligence, I was had the opportunity to talk to other bungalow nerds in the area, and there are a tremendous amount of initiatives to preserve the bungalow. Now, this is a little bit unique. It's not the traditional Southside Chicago brick bungalow. It is the same interior layout, but it is stucco. It does have those rolled eaves. It is of the arts and crafts nature, and really, I'm pretty hard set on maintaining that aesthetic. I find it attractive, and again, you won't find more than one or two of these houses in River Forest of a similar design.
Yep.
Okay, any further questions?
Not further questions, just and it has nothing to do with this particular applicant, but I'm just saying maybe in the future can we get that information in terms of the variance difference? Right, I guess just for knowledge, just for data, for information for us to consider, not to... Something along
with something similar with the FAR one, where you did it. I thought there was something to compare the previous variance that we gave, which is why it sort of demonstrated how big this requested variance was.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we can work on something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've got some of it back to a certain point, but beyond that point, it's a little tough to find.
Okay.
So I'll give you some.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
We'll
right.
Within reason.
Yeah, within reason.
Yeah, that's a great suggestion.
Right. The last 50 years.
Okay.
get on that, would you?
That's right. Okay.
Any
that's
further
it, that's
questions
it.
First? Eleanor, Steve, hearing that, I just want to remind the board, since this was a no vote or a tie vote from the DRB, that unfortunately I am unable to vote because it's a no vote. So we'll need to have we'll
because
need
of the way the municipal code is drafted. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. But if anything,
okay.
Yeah,
right,
it doesn't
say,
make any
okay.
sense, so I regret that.
Okay.
I wouldn't
because the statute says that the negative recommendation or not positive recommendation can only be overridden by a vote of 2/3 of the trustees. It doesn't say corporate authorities like a lot of other places in the municipal code do, and it probably should be consistent, but it's not. So
we should
need four trustee votes. If it's a tie, President Peduzzi can't vote to break it, and it flops.
Okay.
So vote your conscience. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Take the vote, please.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes. Good luck.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Should I hold out? No, I won't. No, it's a yes. It's a yes.
Motion passed.
Didn't need me. All right. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Good job. All right. And oh, by the way, before you leave, please take some, everybody, so you take some peanuts, courtesy of the Kiwanis. And if we don't all eat them tonight, you can take them up to the, customer service area and give them to the police officers, although we don't want to eat too much peanuts. All right, so, all right, moving on. We are now in item 6, which is unfinished business.
Just one technicality.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, we want to continue.
Yeah, let's go. I need a motion to continue 346 Park Avenue to October 15th. The resident wasn't available.
Okay, I move to continue the zoning variations for 346 Park Avenue to October 15, 2018.
Second.
Okay. Got a second. Yep. All right. Let's just take the vote, please. So, Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Motion to pass an ordinance approving a redevelopment agreement for the 7756 Madison Street Skin Care Company Spa Salon Development comprising a part of the Madison Street TIF District of the Village of River Forest, Illinois.
Can I hear a second?
Second.
Thank you. Okay, any further conversation on, you want
to? Yeah, so two things. One.
Yes.
You
got something to say?
Yes. I was going to wait for him, but that's, no.
We got time for that, Mike.
Yeah, I was going to.
Doesn't it have to go before anything happens?
Sorry. No, before the vote.
Before the vote, for sure.
Before the vote.
So
not
I'm
before
recusing.
Discussion. Yeah. He can sit there and listen.
Right. So I'm accusing myself because my law firm represents District 90 and District 200, so I have a common law conflict of interest, so I'm going to ask the clerk not to call my name during the vote.
When we get
4-6A and 7-A, correct. Yeah. All right. So 6-A and 7-A tie together, and we can certainly talk about them in tandem if you would like. At the end of the last meeting, this did not move forward, and having a full complement of trustees, I wanted to bring this back for your consideration. At the same time, one of the suggestions after speaking with Trustee Corsini was, in addition to revisiting this, and the village president, is to have a policy in place as well that can help guide the village in future discussions as it relates to TIF incentives. So this request will not be the first, or will be the first. It will certainly not be the last, and there will be in the next 23 years various projects for redevelopment and rehabilitation, et cetera, in both the Madison Street and North Avenue TIF districts. So it certainly is appropriate to have a policy to help guide folks along when making those requests for them. They come in and say, hey, what are the expectations? What can I expect? This provides that framework for them. So I think this is a good first step. This is a policy that was modeled after the city of Elmhurst and a similar policy they have in place for TIF districts. And certainly, of course, this doesn't limit us at all in the future. You know, through just some real quick research, there are revolving loan programs, there are facade rehabilitation programs, a lot of other things that can become subsets in addition to this. But this, at least, I think is a good first start. My only comment would be is based on when I got the feedback for this and when we had our board agenda, certainly I wanted to get this in front of you to let you know that we're looking at it and get any feedback you might have. I would just suggest referring this to the Economic Development Commission for their input before final approval. And nothing has substantively changed from 6A, the redevelopment agreement. There was some open book language we added in there at the suggestion of Greg Smith. We did that at the end of the last meeting. But outside of that, nothing has changed. The business terms remain the same.
And I'm glad you brought up, because I was reading this, and facade program was something that came to mind with regard to the policy. When it doesn't specifically address that, although I know that's something the ADC has been talking about,
right.
Some programs that, you know, we could incorporate in the TIF. So I don't know, you know, maybe in your conversations with them, something to reference in here, or it would be a subset policy, or, you know, maybe somehow engage them in conversation, see if it's something we should address, okay, at least as an overview in the policy. And I think it's great because we originally talked about putting this together for this specific case, but this is actually an all-encompassing,
yep,
policy that's going to cover us with our TIF districts. And so I think, you know, it's better that it's more comprehensive.
Right.
We can use this moving forward. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah. And the only other comments, again, I would reiterate in support of the agreement under 6A. The EDC did weigh in on this, provided some comment, supported the agreement. And then as well, from a business perspective and a return on an investment, you have an underperforming strip center right now. And the owner is starting to make some improvements. But of the, nine or 10 spaces over there, I can't remember, was it 10? 10 condos.
Yeah.
This person, owner, is going to take 3 of those. So right now what's happening is when you have a vacant strip center or any kind of vacant property, the property owner is going to go to the county and get their property tax assessment reduced every year. So that's why I put in my memo, conservatively, I think you'll get a return on your investment within 5 years because they're not going to be able to appeal to the extent they did previously for a reduction in property taxes.
I did have, oh, I'm sorry,
go ahead.
My only question, I guess, for Lance is that because this is a tenant and not the landlord, and we have our hold harmless agreements, and, you know, there's going to be additional insureds, I would assume the village being named on those insurance policies. Do we have to have the landlord involved in that in case something does happen so that we're not somehow...
For liability
for
issues?
For liability.
Do we own it?
No.
No, we don't.
No, I don't know why we...
Well, the landlord owns the mall. I mean, what if something happens while in the midst of construction, you know, that would occur? Do we have any additional liability landlord?
No.
We're not signing anything.
Okay. No, none whatsoever.
Okay.
If the landlord has concerns about the work being done, he'll raise that with the tenant,
okay,
and they'll deal with it amongst themselves.
So we have no open liability?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
None.
Katie?
So I have a clarification question as far as this coming before us again. My understanding was that this was going to be one of the conditions for the approval of Lake and Lathrop was to have tenant improvement, having the developer help with this. What happened with that?
It's still there.
Yeah, no, it's still there.
This is not part of it. This is part and parcel of that condition. Because she's already leaving by October and willingly leaving. So, you know, she's leaving and they've already negotiated whatever they need to negotiate, and she's moving now over to Madison. Has nothing to do with that particular landlord.
Well, but and Susan can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you presented the condition, it was, you prefaced it by saying we didn't have consensus to help this along at that last meeting, and so wanted to put the condition on the approval of the project.
I don't know, Susan, you might want to, I think it was more of the other tenants that were still there. But I don't want to talk to you.
When did you decide?
I mean, unless you had a different point of view.
I remember saying about what Patty said.
Okay.
And the one thing that I understand that I didn't before is that the lease continues and she's not being forced to leave. It's not the the developer that is requiring her to leave at this time. I would like to give our business owner relief, and if this works, this is fine with me.
All right. Thanks for explaining it. Yeah, so yeah, that's my feeling as well, I think. We're always looking for entrepreneurs like Sandra and investing in folks like you. And this is what I think the TIF was all about, was to help businesses like you. So, and it. So, okay. Any further comments, questions regarding?
I do have a question in terms of if she chose to sell her business, you know, after the work was done, after the first year, and there's still two more payments due. Does that transfer to the new owner? Doesn't
get no. Right. No. The answer would be no.
Okay.
There was
it's not transfer
with her.
So, yeah.
She unless she can, I mean, she could come back to
yeah,
you
have
and
to renegotiate
and renegotiate yeah. that and say here are the new terms. It doesn't stop her from doing that, but it would not automatically succeed.
Right. Okay.
So is it the intent then that the Lake and Lathrop Development will assist in relocating the Allstate guy? Because that's the last tenant left.
We'll see more in the lease.
Yeah, I mean the of the remaining tenants, that's the one that has the most term on their lease. He has term until December.
And
of
how about
20,
this
of,
fitness?
Of 2019. Of 2019.
I think that's February.
Not 2018. And then
February.
Fitness is up in February.
19.
So has she come back to you after?
Yeah, I've had conversations, but I have, to the extent that they've found a new space yet, I have not had follow up on that.
So
I know the owner is looking for a new space.
Okay.
But we have had this general discussion. I mean, these discussions have predated. I've had discussions with all three of them for the last 2-3 months.
Okay. Let me go ahead and take the vote, please.
Okay. Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Carji.
I'm a no still.
Trustee Conte.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
I struggle with this one because I do still feel that there should have been work done with the developer prior to. I absolutely want to support a Riverforce business owner, and I absolutely support the fact that that's why we have the TIF funds to improve the properties on Madison, and so having the policy and all that going forward. Feel the way things were presented that that was going to be part of the improvement of that development as well. I'm going to say no.
President Ducey.
Yes, of course. And I think we'll do whatever we can to help our small businesses. This has nothing to do with Lake and Lathrop. It has everything to do with you performing well and all of our residents going to your shop. So good luck to you.
Motion passes.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any concerns, any other feedback on 7A in terms of the policy, and or are we okay with bringing that to the EDC?
I'd like to get that feedback first.
Yeah, okay.
When's
yeah.
the next meeting, Eric?
So the EDC is meeting with the Plan Commission on standby.
October 11th.
So we'll have this back on the 15th or no?
Unless there's something substantive
okay.
that they need more time with, but that would be the goal. Yep.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So we talked about that. 7B. All right, we're on to 7B.
7B.
Okay, if I can get a motion and a second on 7B.
Move to pass a resolution authorizing the execution of an intergovernmental agreement with Cook County regarding the Village of River Forest's bicycle master plan.
Second.
Wow, that's a nice to hear a second.
Russ speaks, yes.
Wow, I'm loving it. All right. No, it is. It's
and
nice
when
to
I do,
part.
They're going
to
regret it.
Yeah. I regret it already.
No. We regret nothing. We enjoy you here. All right. Why don't you want to go through this? This is actually a grant that we received from Cook County.
Yeah,
this is cool stuff. I mean, this is money that we got from Cook County.
So my only question was what the total cost estimate was. It looked like it could go up to $50,000, but may not. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Are
we really going to spend $50,000 on a bicycle plan?
How was that determined, that fee?
It was a grant.
Shoot high. Because, I mean, honestly, when we apply for grants, we always, you know, try to maximize as much as we can, because sometimes they will, and we just ran into this with the MWRD grants, you ask for a certain amount, and they come back and they scale it back. So we always try to be conservative in our approach for asking for money. So we will try to maximize the value of the grant as much as possible as it relates to the master plan and any preliminary implementation of that plan.
And Eric, am I correct? So that the way it reads, as long as you spend the $40,000, you'll collect the $40,000 or at least seek reimbursement for it. It's not like you have to spend the additional $10,000 for the $50,000 to get the $40,000.
Correct. So this one's it's a good point, and this one's a little bit different.
Do bring value.
Right. So this, a lot of times grants are like on an 80-20 split. A lot of times we have to pay our money first. This one's the opposite. We spend the $40,000 and then we would have up to $10,000 after that.
But you don't have to spend up to $40,000.
No.
You're
reimburse
correct.
Us up to $40,000 and correct. So it may come in under that. My only other question is, have we been looking at this as part of our comp plan?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
that,
I mean, how does this kind of offset some of those costs that have, I mean, you've already done some of the work.
Correct. Okay. So we're going to try to, as best we can, to recoup and recap as much of that as possible. There's some of that that will, from a planning standpoint, that will be in addition to that.
Okay.
And at the end of the day, might be my recommendation to have KLOA, who's done this preliminary work on the comp plan, wrapping up Safe Routes to School. All this is all starting to kind of dovetail very nicely together.
So just kind of, are there ways to make River Forest bicycle friendly?
I hope.
I can't imagine.
Well,
I
here, I
That's a good question, because I asked the same thing. Like, what do we anticipate it looking like? Like actual bike lanes or designated ones?
I'm just not creative.
You know, connecting
the
Prairie Path to Harlem.
Yes.
To north from Thatcher and sort of working it that way.
All the above.
So part of it is to answer your question, yes.
Okay.
I think River Forest can become bike friendly. We've actually started doing that. If you were to go by the train station, we John Anderson and Mark Giannopoulos have worked to redo all the bike racks and add bike racks.
Yeah.
So in the past, we had decorative bike racks that matched the fencing in town. Turns out they're highly ineffective. So we went to the old school snake version, mm-hmm. The black metal. And we've put those up on the Keystone side by the train station. We put them on the Thatcher side, and we've also put them on the Hawthorne side. So there's a ton of bike rack areas. The bicyclists, I'm told, are very pleased with that. It makes their life a lot easier.
That's
so
great.
We are bike friendly in that regard.
I
think part of this is not only to put the bike lanes, the bike routes that interconnect to the Elmwood Park and to Oak Park and to Forest Park, how it would connect ultimately to the Forest Preserve, where other bike racks could be placed in town. We're working with a dentist up north on North Avenue that's asked for to put bike racks in by his business
and trying to support that.
And Elmwood Park already has bike routes, so basically they have a lot of signage that shows that this is a bike route or bike path, so that people follow those particular streets through town. So, I mean, they did that a while ago, and
yeah.
I mean, I assume, so it's not necessarily just the infrastructure of putting lanes in, but more signage, racks, even just coming up with one thoroughfare that could be designated as a bike thoroughfare type of thing. There's lots of ways to make it bike friendly.
Is the anticipation that the plan would also give some sort of ballpark of what these upgrades or changes would?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's coming up with the routes and ideas and then also offering a
cost
dollar figure of what we could be looking at.
Yep.
And do you anticipate if we look at obviously working with Cook County then, so having a partnership if we are going to connect to the Prairie Path
mm-hmm.
and or going through there that and do you get a sense that they're open to?
Well, there's another plan, too.
Right. So there's money being funded through the same, essentially the same pot that the Chicago Avenue Reconstruction Project is going through, these general. So basically what happens is the federal government gives local planning agencies dollars for transportation-related projects, which that is in this study for is really being run through the West Central Municipal Conference, their dollars. We've kind of piggybacked on that, and now we're part of that. And so that's going to take that planning study from more or less Rosemont all the way through River Forest to, you know, to Madison Street and then ultimately to the Prairie Path. So this is just phase one study. So that would still mean there'd be phase two construction, and then they still have to pay for it. So I just want to temper everyone's expectations, right?
Yeah.
But yes, it's all part of that. If you go down that Des Plaines River Trail, I mean, once you get to Rosemont, it goes from being like hard gravel to basically just an old school dirt path, right? So the idea would be to change that. If someone has rode his bike to work,
mm-hmm.
that would be the plan. Wasn't easy.
Yeah, it's cool. It's going to be really neat once it gets moving. Any other further questions regarding the bicycle master plan? Hearing none, I would ask the clerk to take the vote, please.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes.
Trustee Hennig.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay, wonderful. I think that ends our regular session. I'd ask if we can have a motion to move into executive session.
I move to go into executive session for the purposes of the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the public body, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired, and setting of a price for sale or lease of property owned by the public body.
Second.
Do I need to voice vote that? Or
no, you need to roll call on that.
Okay. Trustee Corsini.
Yes.
Trustee Cargi.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Conti.
Yes.
Trustee Hennig.
Yes.
Trustee Gibbs.
Yes.
Open session.
Motion to return to open session.
Yep, second. You're second.
Second.
Trustee Corsini.
Here.
Trustee Cargi.
Here.
Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Conti. Trustee Hennig.
Here.
Trustee Gibbs.
Here.
President Aducey.
Here.
Eric, can you give us, can I just ask two questions on the update for the comp plan?
Yep.
And the update on the safe routes to school, because the school district keeps sending out little messages with that. So.
Yep, absolutely. How about safe routes first?
Okay.
So that, I reviewed the final draft last night, provided some additional comments to Jeff. He's going to give those to KLA to get those implemented. The plan is to get that released by the end of the week, and then Traffic and Safety has a meeting coming up in 2 weeks
okay.
to have that initial discussion. Part of the hang-up on that, and something I underestimated, was it really got into a lot of the uncontrolled intersection issues that we have. And so when we got into the draft report, there's a lot of discussion about stop signs, where there were never stop signs before. And I know this has been an ongoing issue in town as it relates to the uncontrolled intersections, but I think we wanted to be a little bit more mindful and thoughtful of that. So we spent some more time with that than I probably had originally had anticipated. But that's coming to a crescendo, if you will.
Okay.
I can answer any questions on that.
So when is it going to come to the board?
It's going to come to the Traffic and Safety Commission first in 2 weeks.
So we'll have something in November?
Yes.
November?
And it may take traffic.
Comp plan the same way?
Well, and I'm not, I don't know if traffic and safety is going to conclude that evening. They may, it wouldn't surprise me if they took a couple meetings on that, just because there's a lot in there. It's good stuff, but it's...
So November, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. So out of traffic and safety would come a plan like identifying where stop signs, I mean, that's sort of, that's the whole thing. So,
right.
So what we presented to us is their use of that study to make changes to traffic.
Right, and so ultimately they're going to take the traffic consultant recommendation and either approve it in whole, in part, and make a recommendation back. So I would wager a guess that it'll come back with some modifications just because there's a pretty high volume of stop signs and markings. And all. I mean, it's good stuff. There's a lot of implementation in there.
And that's something that we can talk about phasing in over time or...
The stop sign component of it, I'd have to go back and look. You know, we have to be mindful of once you start putting stop signs in certain areas, that obviously has a chain effect on those things. So I don't know if it's something you can just put in. You know, those would probably all have to go in once. Then you're going to have all the pavement markings are going to be part of it. They do look at the crossing guards and make some recommendations there. So,
it's pretty comprehensive.
It's pretty comprehensive, yep.
Okay.
It'll be some good discussion.
And then the comp plan?
Lisa's got an update that's coming up on October 11th.
The Plan Commission and the Economic Development Commission are holding a joint meeting on October 11th to discuss specifically the corridor portion of the comp plan. We, as a staff, have taken a first review at it, and now John and his team want to walk the EDC and the Plan Commission through that and get their input. So once those pieces are put together, it will be coming to the Village Board in its draft form. That's the
November.
The plan is we're still pushing the team to get it done in November, which was the original plan.
October 11th is the meeting of the Plan Commission.
It's the joint meeting of the Plan Commission in the EDC.
Normally that would normally go just to Plan Commission, but because we're getting into the corridors, which instead of trying to do them both on separate nights, we're just pulling them all together.
Yeah, it makes sense to have those two discussions more together.
And then I just spoke to Joan, so I wanted to update the board and the finance committee that audit is hopefully winding down for a draft. So she had proposed that potentially having a meeting at 6 o'clock before the board meeting on the 15th. So are you two available?
Yes.
At 6 and before 7 so that we can have our review of the draft of the audit.
Yes. I don't want to talk about that in open session, though, but I can happy to talk to you offline.
Yes, it's fine.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, there is progress. We have finalists.
With sashes.
Yes. I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Aye.
Aye.